And I want to pick up on chapter 51 of Jeremiah, verse 20. And some commentaries insist that verses 15 through 19 are parenthetical. I don't see that at all. If they were parenthetical, then our subject of verse 20 would probably have to be the Medo-Persian Empire. But I don't believe it is. You can't just move verse 20 up to 13. The thought is different. So I personally am convinced that we're continuing verse 19, which says the portion of Jacob is not like them, different than them, which we've been talking about. And for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rock of his inheritance. So our subject in here is Jacob, and so we carry that subject on down through verse 20. And then we read that, thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. So God is going to use Jacob in the end time especially. Now we know that this wasn't done when Babylon was conquered. Judah was weak. It didn't have couldn't be used at all. They had no influence or did nothing concerning the overrun of the Medo-Persian Empire. It wasn't part of it. So this must be fulfilled in the last days, in which God will definitely use Jacob in conquering the world, Gentile world powers, in which Babylon is the head of gold. And so the word battle axe here, it's the only place it's used, I believe, and has to do with anything that will break things up, anything that will destroy, anything they can go in battle with. They used different manners of weapons to do this. So this is, God is going to use the nation, his people, to defeat the nations in the end time. There, back in chapter 23, we had that they the thought of a hammer there. But this is a different word. It's not the same thing. It means to pound, to drive, or something. But God is going to use the nation, Israel, to defeat nations, to break. Notice it says, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy the kingdom. The phrase here, with thee, is used over and over and over again concerning them. Notice all the way down through verse 23. Notice how many times the phrase with thee is used. And also the phrase, I will. So all of this is concerning Jacob in the end time, that God will use them to break up. You might look at verse 24, I believe it is. And I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of the Chaldean their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight. Now notice the language there, in your sight. Now the thought your here has to do with the same as the phrase with thee. So that's another proof that we're talking about Jacob there rather than the Medo-Persia Empire. I think I counted 11 times the phrase I will is used in this chapter. Well, down to verse 24, I think it's used 11 times. The word break is used 9 times through these verses. And it's true that God used Cyrus to do this after the Babylonish rule was over. But here we see that it's definitely going to be Jacob that will be used at that time. Roberta, look up Psalms 2. And I think it's verse 9, but I'm not sure about that. But God says he's going to set his son. But then also we see that it's going to be, read from verse 1 down through there. I think you'll see that God is going to use Jesus as the one who's going to do this. Verse 3 especially. And he'll speak in his wrath and so forth. And it's going to be Christ. He says, lo, I have set my This is Jesus. And then in verse 9, he says, and thou shalt break them. They want to break the things of God, but God is going to break them. But he's going to use Zion to do it. He's going to use his people to do it. Now, people, you might say, well, he don't have to do that. That's true. He doesn't have to. But it's a marvelous thing to me that God allows us to be a part of what he's doing. So many times, I believe that God will do something whether I pray or whether I don't. He's going to do what he wants to do. But he lets me pray and be a part of what he's doing through communication with him. So it is with his people here. They'll be a part. And so Christ is going to be the one. And we think about in Joel 2 and all these nations, he says all, Joel 3, I'm sorry. But he says all nations shall come down in the valley of Jehoshaphat. And he would meet with them there. He'll talk with them there. But he's going to bring Israel down to the place that they are absolutely weak, totally weak, unable to do anything at all. And then he's going to use them to destroy all these nations. Now that is a real miracle. But God is a God of miracles anyway. And he knows what he's doing and things. I think in the Gospels, I think one time I counted 35 miracles that Jesus did. Well, he's going to do some more when he comes back. He sets up the kingdom. So he's going to do it with them, or use them to do these things with. In verse 21, he says, I will break in pieces the horse and his rider. And this is where the starting place is going to be. I think the horse might speak of the Calvary, well, the chariot and his rider would speak more of the infantry today. But whatever the armor, whatever the military power that might be in that day, he says, I'm going to break it. With thee, I will break in pieces the horses, the rider, and with thee. Notice these with these all down through here. I will break the chariots with his rider. We proved that he could do this at the Red Sea, didn't we? Remember the 15th chapter? He said the horse and the rider as he cast into the sea and all the Egyptian chariots. And it isn't much for him to break in pieces these things. And you see all these army coming down through there with their very best of equipment and thinking they're so mighty in power. And God's going to take little weak Israel, Judah, go for and tear them up. You know what? What year was it that they destroyed six nations in 6 days? 67, I believe it was, somewhere in there. And that was the power of God, although at that time they didn't recognize it as such, but they will hear when God performs this miracle. And then in verse 22, we have the man and the woman, and the young, the old and young, and the young man and the maiden. Now, first we have the armed forces taken care of. Now in verse 22, we have the civilians that will be destroyed, those that go against Israel, the nation. And then third, we read it in verse 23, and he'll break in pieces with thee, the shepherd, his flock, and I will break the husbandman with his yoke of oxen. And all of these, I think, speak of the possessions of these people that will be taken and captured, put in, what is it called? Can't say the word I want to use, to come into what an army captures and spoil, that's the word I'm looking for. All of these will be spoil that they'll be able to take. And so then last we have the break in pieces, the captain and the ruler. The word captain, many times in the Old Testament, is translated governor. I think 23 times I counted it, that the same word is translated captain is translated governor. And all of these speak of leadership that will be break in pieces. They won't be any for these nations that come down against Israel. Then in verse 25, he says, behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroyeth all the earth, and I will stretch out mine hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain. Now, mountains in Scripture, and we've had this before over and over, especially studying in Revelation, always speaks of nations prophetically. But this is a high mountain. This is a thought I think of here is exalted and lifted up, a mountain that's big enough to destroy. And that's what Babylon was, wasn't it? Able to destroy. And he said, I'm against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroyeth all the earth. And truly this is a story of Babylon. They went, they conquered, they destroyed, and God said he was against this. We know that this is a symbolic mountain too, because Babylon is not a mountainous region at all. The only mountain in Babylon was the one that Nebuchadnezzar built himself, a man-made mountain. But that's a flat plain. You see, there's no mountains there. But so they couldn't be literally called a destroying mountain. It's definitely a symbolic language. So he says, and I will stretch my hand about on thee and roll thee down from the rocks, rocky mountain. Now there's only one rock that can be exalted and lifted up above all other rocks. The rest of them are going to have to be rolled down out of the rocks. And our rock is the Lord Jesus Christ. He's the only one that can be raised up and in a high and lofty place. When we think of rock too, we think of something that's solid, something that's unmovable, and that's what Jesus is called. Let's look at a couple of scriptures along that line. Alan, look up Psalms 31:1, and Evelyn, Psalms 42:9. And when people are exalted and lifted up of themselves, then they're really taking the place of God, aren't they, in their life? And this was the place Nebuchadnezzar did this. In the fourth chapter of Daniel, we read, he says, is not this the great Babylon that I have made? And he exalted himself up above God. But God didn't stand for it even for a short time, didn't he? And he brought him down and made him beast out of him. And so we only have one solid rock. Psalms 31:1. Yeah, verse 2 is what I wanted, yeah. Be thou my strong rock. And this is where salvation is, isn't it? This is where deliverance is. But it's not in Nebuchadnezzar. It's not in any leadership whatsoever. And God is going to bring those things down and destroy them that lift themselves up. We read in 2 Thessalonians 2 where the Antichrist will exalt himself and lift himself up above all that is called God. Every name. And so he's going to be destroyed. And then in Psalms 42:9, so I was thinking as I was reading that verse earlier, that of Israel, and today they're not putting their trust in God, are they? Putting their trust in the nation. But there's coming a day they're going to realize, and they'll cry out to God to be their rock, to be their power, or something solid and steadfast. Well, he says he's going to throw these others down out of the rock. And then he says, I will make thee a burnt mountain, a destroyed mountain. And if we look at this phrase in a religious sense, we can apply this to the 18th chapter of Revelation. And the destruction of the religious Babylon will be of fire. And we have the same self-exaltation in the religious systems of this world, too, as they had in the political Babylon back in that day. How big they are, how rich they are, how exalted they have lifted themselves up to be, but God's going to bring them down. He's only going to have one exalted man. And so he's going to make a burning rock out of them. My mind, as I was thinking about this earlier, I was thinking about some of these volcanic eruptions and how those burning rocks kind of roll out of the top of the mountain and roll down, and seems like the whole mountain's on fire, doesn't it? I think the same thing can be applied in a spiritual sense of the nations and of the religious system, that God is you're just going to erupt these pyres, and they'll be nothing but ash. They roll down. Anyway, just some thoughts to throw in there concerning that. Verse 26, and they shall not take thee a stone for a corner, or a stone for a foundation, but thou shalt be declared desolate forever, saith the Lord. In other words, there's not going to be one stone large enough to use for a building stone when it gets through in destruction. Now, if we apply the thought, you know, symbolically to a mountain, these great, enormous rocks, many times they're in cliffs and projected out, and how big they are. But not so when God tears this religious mountain down and the political mountain down. They'll never be able to build it up again. It's going to be destroyed forever. It takes a good-sized rock to be a cornerstone. It takes a good-sized rock to be a good foundation. And none of these is going to fit the bill. They won't be large enough for any of that, because God is going to make it desolate. Verse 27, there are six things all the way down to verse 27 and 28, there are six I counted in there. That is a call for the Medes and the Persians to set up. Now, we're going to look at it and apply it in a spiritual sense too. But let's look at it in the natural and say this is the destruction of Babylon. Set ye up a standard in the land, blow the trumpet among the nations, prepare the nations against her, call together against her the kingdom of Arat, Minai, Ash, Chinash, appoint a captain against her and cause the horse to come. Now this is a call for these nations to come down against Babylon. The first one we read is to set up a standard. Standard is used for identification. Standard is used to show who's doing this. I remember when one of the biggest deals during World War II was setting up a flag on Iwo Jima, and they reenacted the whole thing so they get pictures of it. It was so important to the nation. Well, this, I think you have the same thought here. To establish this now belongs to us. It's ours. And the second one is to blow a trumpet among the nations. It's a war trumpet. It speaks of sounding out. It speaks of a warning that we're coming. So many things that we can see in this pertaining to the conquering of Babylon. Prepare the nations against her, and then or enable them to come to make preparations for them. And then we read of a call, and it names three of these nations that were definitely coming against them. Now, two of these nations that we read of were Armenia, nations of Armenia. Arat was a country between the Tigris River and going north the Caucasus River mountain that separated, I don't know what land that is now right now. Anyway, the north of the mountains there is Soviet Union. There was. There's been so many changes here lately. But all of that was termed Arat. And the mountain of Arat was where Noah's Ark landed. Well, Turkey does own part of that now. Comes right up to there. Yes, it didn't. Yeah, you know, it didn't at the time that we're reading here, though. But it does now. Yeah, it's part of Turkey. And then Arat was the country of Arat at that time was between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and it kind of went up between those two seas up to the mountain range. And this belonged to Armenia. Now, the word Minai, it was the southern part, or called the lower part of Armenia. And this went west of Media, but it was still part of Armenia. And then the third one is Ash Chinez, and this was part of Asia Minor, went all the way over. It is still part of Armenia at the time, I'm sure. But anyway, it went over to Asia Minor on the west side of Arat. if you'll study in the 10th chapter of Genesis, and I believe it's verse 3, that Ashkenaz was a son of Japheth that had migrated up there and become this in this area. Now, all of these, here's the point I want to make too. All of these were captured by the Assyrians and put in slavery. They had such a terrible, terrible bondage, a yoke upon them. And so when Babylon went up to conquer and defeated Nineveh, with the help of Persia, they were glad. They were excited over this because this would relieve some of their bondage. And it did for a while. They were given a lot of freedom by Babylon. But little by little, tariffs were put upon them and they were charged higher taxes. And pretty soon they were back into yoke again. Now, when the Medes and the Persians needed help, they could rely upon these Armenian nations to help them then. And so this is the thought. This is why we read, prepare the nations against her and call together against her. That her is Babylon, you know, the kingdoms of these Armenian countries up there. And then the next thing we read is appoint captains against her. There had to be leadership. And the captains were, we know, of Media Persia. The first main captain was Darius of the Medes that came down. And he ruled there for about a year after they took Babylon. But they brought these captain down against her. And then we read, and caused the horses to come up in as a rough caterpillar. The thought here of rough caterpillar, the word rough could be translated shaggy, but the thought I believe here is without number. How many caterpillars could come and destroy? Let's go back over to Roberta again. Psalms 105, verse 34, I believe it is, and Alan, Joel 1, 4, and well, look up further in 51. Well, I got it right here. I'll read that. Psalms 105:34. I'm sorry. So we have without number, in multitude, and very hungry. Now let's apply this to people. How many soldiers? How much is coming down against Babylon? So many hairy people, shaggy people. No doubt the Armenians didn't have much of a uniform or anything. They would just help it defeat. And so, but another thought there is that the fact that these were hungry as well. Joel 1:4. So what one thing of war, now these aren't literal bugs, insects. These are four-legged destroyers, you know, that's going to come down. And what one doesn't destroy, another will come and destroy, and another one will come to destroy, till there's absolutely nothing left. I have read concerning caterpillars and locusts when they come through, and they just simply wipe things clean. And so that's the thought, I believe, that we have here, is these armies coming down against them. And when we think about this in the end time, and how these armies are going to come down, and their purpose will be literally to wipe out the Jewish people, to actually annihilate them. That will be their purpose. But God's going to pick up these little weak people. It's completely surrounded by the enemy, can't do anything for themselves. God's going to take them and defeat everything. But we have the picture here of what's going to come down against Babylon. Will also come down in the last days, and God will intervene. Verse 28, prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the captains thereof, and all the rulers thereof, and all the land of his dominion. And the land shall tremble and sorrow. Preparation, see, of these coming down. A trembling, a sorrow. And why? For in the rest of this, notice the colon there. Think about this. Why? For every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon. Now, question, was all the purpose of God performed against Babylon 500 something years before Christ? No, it wasn't, was it? There were some wonderful changes, and God did have some purpose in all that, but it wasn't completely performed. So this is definitely takes us down to the last days, when every purpose of the Lord shall be performed in Babylon. Now, we talked about this, that Babylon is just the head of Gentile world powers. And the last of the Gentile world powers will be a revival of the Roman Empire, won't it? And we studied that in Daniel. So the end of this, the purpose, and Roman Ephesians 1 tells us that the purpose of God is in Christ, Christ Jesus. So the complete performance of God's purpose is going to be setting up his kingdom with his son at the head of it. That's going to be the fullness of the performance. There are many things that God has brought forth as fulfilling his purpose, but not the whole performance of his purpose. And we'll see that, more of this as we go on. But all this is against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without a habitation. Now, again, there's the religious Babylon, and a complete destruction of them isn't going to perform all of his purpose, is it? There's more to do after that, by destroying the political system that will be on the earth too. So much of this is future. Verse 30, the mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. They have remained in their holes. Their might hath failed, and became as women, and they have burned her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. And the word forborne is an interesting word. I looked it up in Strong's Concordance, and I thought it was real interesting. The word itself means to be flabby. And I thought quite a little bit about that, of how could that thought be applied to this. But you know, flabby people don't have as much get up and go as others, do they? And notice what it says here. They didn't want to fight. They was willing to leave fighting off. They was willing to just hide in the holes, as we read here. And they remained in their holes to hide there. There was no actions of these people at all when the enemy came down. Their might had failed. They came as women, as in weakness, and they have burned her dwelling place. Her bars are broken. All of her defense are brought down to nothing. Burned the houses, and they were unable to even do anything about it. And here, this mighty, mighty city. Now, I want to make mention of this, which I have before, but this wasn't all done at once. This was done in over a period of time. You know, when they first came in there, Darius the Mede dwelt there. He set up his rulership in Babylon, and it wasn't destroyed. It wasn't to Cyrus's time that this city was really destroyed. So anyway, this wasn't overnight, is the point I'm trying to make. Verse 31 says, one post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. The word post here comes from a Hebrew word that means to run. It has the thought of those that are on guard would have a runner, and that would deliver messages. So I think probably what we're saying here is that one guard would run to meet another. Those on the walls would run to meet one sent by the king, and they would bring messages in relay, one to another. But this was the ideal thought way at that time. But in the midst of all the confusion and all the shouting and the coming in and taking the city, I can see here where the message would be hard to get through. So the purpose was to show the king of Babylon that the city was taken at one end. But when we read Daniel 5, The king didn't know too much about it being taken, did he? It's an interesting thought. But I think this, the thought of this, the city is taken at one end. Of course, I don't know which end. I would suppose this would be at the end where the river entered in. But it wouldn't have to be. It would be at the other end. But what the thought I believe that we have here is blocking off of one end where they came in so they nobody could leave. But whatever, I'm not too sure about the thought of that one end. I thought about that quite a little bit. In verse 32, and that the passage are stopped. And this is what got me thinking along this line, is the passage is stopped. Well, of course, that could mean all the other gates, too, was blocked off where nobody could leave. And the reeds have burned with fire. And then we read that the reeds, they have burned with fire, and the men of war are frightened. Usually everywhere where we read reeds refers to water, and all the way through the scripture. It either refers to the water itself or to the vegetation growing on the water bank. This is where they found little Moses in the bulrush by the water bank. I remember as a kid, we used to gather reeds. We called them cattails. I don't know whether you ever saw those or not, but they grow straight up and they get real fuzzy at the top. And these things will burn, especially if you dip them in kerosene first. We used to make torches out of them. But you can just imagine now, coming in there, lighting all of that, those reeds. And not only that, you know, when the soldiers would come in, they would make a lot of noise, you know, and shouting, and all of these they did purposely to scare, or frighten, I should say, rather, the enemy. And the more they could frighten them, the better chance they had of getting them to run. So all of these things were done, and it did purpose. Notice it says, they burned with fire, and the men of war were frightened. So that it fulfilled what they designed it to be. And I imagine it was quite a sight, especially if you was up on the wall and looked down and saw all of these things burning, because the water that was dry, it was dry ground. And anyway, verse 33, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her. Yet a little while, the time of her harvest shall come. So now we turn the thought to the daughters of Babylon. And I feel that when we talk about the daughters, we're talking about more of the religious of this than the political. And so if we're doing that, let's apply this whole thought along that line then. For God is saying, the Lord of power, the God of Israel, is saying that the daughters of Babylon is like a threshing floor. In comparison, now there's going to come a time to put her on this threshing floor and thresh her. And we read of that threshing of the religious Babylon in the 18th chapter of Revelation. And we've been reading in that off and on all the way through here. This is the threshing floor. But the question is, when is this going to happen? It seems as you go along, it'll never happen, doesn't it? But God has a time, and I'm always amazed at God's timing of things in the scripture. God knows just exactly when to do what he wants to do. And so he simply tells, in a little while, wait just a little longer. It won't be long now. In a little while, we're going to do this. And the time of her harvest shall come. Just as sure as though it was already, the threshing floor is ready, and we're simply waiting for God's time. Now, let's think of this in a little different light. One time, Jesus, this is the book of John, and I don't know, close to further, you might remember where it is. But Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he says, look out through the field. It's white and ready for harvest. And truly, it was ready at that time, wasn't it? Everything was ready. God would have gathered his wheat into the barn, 13th chapter of Matthew, and burned the tares at that time. But Jesus also goes to say, where are the laborers? Now, I do know, and you know, that that this is applied so much to missionaries. But you read that carefully, and it just can't be done because the missionaries are not going to harvest the systems of this world. Rome and the Caesars of Rome were abused that he was God. And all of these could have been put down. It was time to do it, but they rejected their king, their Messiah. So all of this has been postponed now, these 2,000 years. They're all yet to do. Missionaries today claim some things that just aren't theirs to claim. For instance, the Great Commission, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. This is not for the church to do. This is for Israel to do. They're going to do this. They're also going to glean the fields. They're going to harvest the fields, not the church. We're going to be gone much before this ever takes place. So we see that in these verses, that again, there's going to be another time when the threshing floor will be ready, and both religious and political systems will be brought upon this threshing floor. And then in verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me. Maybe we ought to take a break there, because we're getting into it. In verse 34, we have seven accusations that are against Babylon. Accusations that Israel has made against them. We might even call these indictments that they have made, because the language here is kind of a courtroom thoughts that is injected in verse 34, 35. And in 36, we have God's answer to their cry. When God's people cry unto him, God usually hears and answers. Didn't he in Egypt? Sure did. And in the book of Judges, over and over and every time they come into oppression, they cried unto the Lord and God lifted up somebody to help them. Well, so it will be in the tribulation time. When they cry unto the Lord and there's no other way to turn except unto him, then God will answer their cry. Notice the cry in verse 34. Against the king of Babylon, he devoured me, crushed me, he emptied me, he swallowed me up, he filled him belly and cast me out. Now, this is a story of both religious and political systems, because this is what religious system does. We talked this morning class about Catholicism. And this is just exactly what they do. They devour them, they crush them, they empty them, they swallow them up, they fill themselves with all of their possessions, they take these things, and then when they get them through, they cast them out to die. And this is exactly what Babylon did to Israel. And then I was thinking, dude, swallowed me up like a dragon. My mind, when I was reading this, my mind went to the 12th chapter of Revelation, of the woman that fled into the wilderness, and we read that the dragon, I don't know what verse it is, whose turn is it to read? I think it's Evelyn. Revelation 12, close to the end of the chapter, I think it is, but we read of the dragon that out of his mouth will come a flood, and God will open the earth up to swallow the flood. You find it for me? Is it? Yeah. But I was talking about the dragon, the flood, that verse is, and how God is going to divinely protect from her from being swallowed up by the dragon. Verse 15, is that it? Anyway, we can definitely see an end time fulfillment in these things that God is going to do. Then in verse 35, the seventh one of this is concerning violence done unto me. Now, notice the pronouns that are used down in verse 34 and 35. I counted these. I don't know whether I remember how many I counted or not. I believe there was nine, if I remember right, nine pronouns used, usually me or my. And in verse 35, violence is done unto me, to my flesh, be upon Babylon. Terrible, terrible violence. The phrase, to my flesh, I feel, has to do with the word could be translated kinfolk. I think it has to do with the 10 tribes more than the two tribes, me and my flesh. But all of this is going to be upon Babylon. They're going to bear the responsibility of this. Now, whether we look at it historically, they were responsible. They did the purpose of God and then went beyond this. They were very harsh in their violence. And God's going to hold them responsible for their harshness. So then we read, shall the inhabitants of Zion say, so we know who's doing the saying here. We know who's doing the talking in verse 34 and 35. It's the inhabitants of Zion is talking. And so the pronouns would be concerning them. And then we read, and my blood upon the inhabitants of the Chaldeans shall Jerusalem say. And so Zion and Jerusalem are the speakers. And God is going to avenge the blood of his people upon not only Babylon, but all the Chaldeans for their violence. Now, verse 36, as I said before, God answers the cry. And he says, therefore, or because of this, because of the cry, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will plead thy cause. And notice the I wills down through the remainder of this chapter. Over and over and over, I think I read 9 I wills in relation to the pronouns that we had previously. So he said, because you cry unto me, therefore, thus saith the Lord, I will plead thy cause. And the word plea here has a little thought of a courtroom situation. I looked up the word plea, and it means to strive, contend, or contend with. And we think of a courtroom situation, that's what a lawyer does, isn't it? He contends with the others, and he said, now I'm gonna contend your cause and take vengeance in your place, and I will put her sea and make her spring dry. Well, I think the word sea probably is a better render of this would be lake. There was no seas around Babylon in the natural. But I think the thought here is water, because we compare the drying up of seawater and the drying up of spring water and how important water is. You know, Jesus prayed it pretty important. He says that whosoever drinketh of me, he told a woman in John 4, will never thirst again. So I think we can see a drought here that God will bring, a spiritual as well as physical, especially spiritual drought upon the land. And we've mentioned this before, the need, water has all gone. It's been dried up, and they have a great need for it. Verse 37, and Babylon shall become heaps, a dwelling place for dragons, an establishment and a hissing without an inhabitant. Now we've talked about this before. I believe it was in chapter 25 that this is said concerning Israel. And so it will be with Babylon, be brought up to nothing. Their life will be put to shame in everything. They shall roar together like lions, and they shall yell as lion whelp. I was thinking along this line, you know, a lion is supposed to be a mighty powerful creature, a conqueror, and the way they, I've seen pictures and read about this, the way they capture lions is they get around and get them frightened, and then they drive them into an area where they can trap them. Well, I was thinking along this line, and you might have some other thoughts about this, but they shall roar together like lions, not knowing what or that happened, not knowing they're being defeated, not knowing anything of what's going on around them. This is the way that Babylon was captured. There may be a lot of noise, but very little power. That same way with the young lions, so, you know, the whelp lions, making their noise. Verse 39, and in their heat will I make their feast, and will make them drunken, and they shall, that they may rejoice, and sleep a perpetual sleep, and not wake, saith the Lord. And this is the way God did it in the natural. It was during a feast time, wasn't it? They were drunken, and they were brought down to nothing, Daniel 5. They were rejoicing with a false joy. See, this is what a drunken joy is. It's all false. You wake up the next morning sick and nothing, no joy at all. It's all false. And then they die that way. This is a sleep, and then it tells us it's a perpetual sleep, and they're not ever going to wake up from. So we know that this did happen. Roberta, look up Isaiah 21 and read the first 5 verses in that. And we see a similar thought in there. She drink and arise, you princes. And this was so terrible. The vision of this is so terrible. We read there that Isaiah was in physical pain over this. And yet, what he saw was approximately 100 years before it took place. And yet, it was so real to Isaiah that he was in pain. How much more will the pain be when it becomes a reality in the last days, too? You know, I think our human mind is so finite that I don't think we can possibly understand the horror of the tribulation period and how terrible it's going to be. It's like many other sufferings, I guess the only people that really know is people that go through it. And I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams with the he-goat. And this simply speaking, and bring them like a sacrifice, like you would bring a sacrifice, meek, humble, being led into death. And how is Shishak taken? And how is the praise of the whole earth surprised? Does anybody have the blue book with you that we give out, that little blue book that we give out? There's a note on there in that book concerning Shishak, and I tried to prove this, and I had no way of doing it. I don't know who wrote it. I know Sister Bodie wrote some of the things in there, but she didn't write all of them. Somebody had added things to it. But I tried to search this out. It says it in the book that this is referring to the Antichrist. And everything that I look concerning, I found no connection to that whatsoever. Somebody might say, well, the Antichrist will come out of Babylon. This may be true. But the word Shishak has every place. It's just simply another name for Babylon. And the only place it's used is right here in verse 41. There is another place, I believe. In chapter 25, we have the word. Read that for me. Right, in chapter 25, verse 26, I believe it is. But I don't see how that could be applied to the Antichrist either. Anyway, the Babylon was the first country, was ahead of this image that he saw, the head of gold. The feet part of this image was the revival of the Roman Empire. And I see no connection of this in the Antichrist. Now, maybe somebody will tell me what they get a revelation of that for. I don't contend to be right on that. If it is, why, I'd like to hear from somebody. But anyway, this is taken, and notice 2 exclamations here, not questions, but exclamation. How is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How has Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? In other words, what they're saying is, I can't understand it. I can't understand. We read this in Revelation 9. They stood afar off, shaking their head and say, I don't understand it. It's so far beyond me. We might compare this with Daniel 2, Alan, Daniel 2, 38, I believe it is. And this become a monstrosity of nations, didn't it? Oh, down through the years. And then we might read that too in Nebuchadnezzar's opinion of the chapter 430, I believe it is, of that chapter. And we read that he lived like a beast, and his nails grew, and everybody shook their head and said, I can't understand it. I don't say that there, but I can just imagine people's response to this. Well, what about when Babylon is destroyed, the religious Babylon? You see, they're going to have the same thing. They just, people just stand back and shake their head and say, alas, alas, that great city. Look at it now. And God is going to do a work there. So the whole earth will be surprised and become astonished. Babylon will be astonishment among the nations. Verse 42, the sea is come up upon Babylon. She is covered with a multitude of the waves thereof. Her cities are desolate, and a dry land in the wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth, neither doth any son of man pass thereby. So the waves, the terrible waves of people and warriors will come up upon Babylon until she's just covered with a multitude of them. We read in several places where waves in this Rome, the sea, speaking of people through the scriptures. And this will be a situation. Notice the change of tense between verse 42 and 43. And her cities are desolation. Remember how much earlier this was written, and as though it was already. Now, when God purposed something, as though it's already done. So the cities are already, we might say, a desolation, a dry land, and a wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth, neither doth any son of man pass thereby. As though God counts it, as though it's already done. And I will punish Baal in Babylon, and I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he said, swallowed up. And the nation shall not flow together any more unto him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. Now we go into the religious system, and definitely this is religion. Punishing Baal of these things. The word Baal means Lord or Master, and we could translate that away. I will punish the master, religious masters of Babylon. If these gods are so great, why couldn't they protect Babylon? And we read in one Sunday morning here, Alan was talking about it. If Baal was so great, why couldn't he defend himself when Gideon pulled down the altars? You see, it shows the weakness. And our God is great, that he will punish the gods of this world in such a big way. The word punish could be translated to visit. In fact, it is several places, especially in the book of Jeremiah. And this represents the false church. And we read here that I will bring out of his mouth, or pull out of his mouth, that which he has swallowed up. And over the years, religious systems have swallowed up by deceit. Nations and people have been overtaken by doctrine and many religious things that they've brought. Idolatry to the uttermost. He has overwhelmed them with it. Evelyn, look up Hosea 8 for me. And I think it's verse 8. That I want, but not only is people swallowed up, but nations are swallowed up, and these nations will not flow together any more unto him. The complete separation because of the destruction of the religious Babylon. Start with a verse about verse 5 on that, and read through 8. The calf of Samaria was the thought was taken from Egypt, and. But all of these, any form of idolatry, I think we can see that in there, will be taken. And then notice the colon there after him and a shout. Yes, the wall of Babylon shall fall. And oh, how true this is, a definite statement that the wall of Babylon shall fall. And nobody is going to stop it. There'll be no harmony of the nations that had turned to idolatry. They're going to back away from that. And this wall shall fall. Multiple places. Verse 45. And people shall go out in the midst of her and deliver every man his soul from the fierce anger of the Lord. Oh, run from this. Get away from it. And notice he says, my people. And we had that call in the 18th chapter of Revelation to come out of them. Leave them alone. Get away. Deliver yourself from your soul from this, because in all of this is the fierce anger of God. When Babylon was taken, there was a remnant that really took heed to this, that left. And God blessed them for leaving Babylon. Not all of the Jewish people left Babylon, but under the influence of Ezra and Nehemiah and some other wonderful leaders that they came out, and God blessed them for coming out. But many stayed, and they suffered loss because they stayed. So we have the call here to come out. In verse 46, at least your heart faint, you see. If they stay, their heart, they'll die. At least your heart faint, and ye fear for the rumor that shall be heard in the land. A rumor that shall both come one year, and after that in another year, shall come a rumor and violence in the land, ruler against ruler. Now, this happened in Babylon, and I mentioned before, it didn't happen at once. But I think the thought here that we have, especially in time, is when you hear the first rumor, get out. When you hear the first message, the first call, get out of there, because it won't be long and the last rumor will come. There'll be another one, and that's when the destruction is going to take place. So don't wait too long. God is calling people out today even to get out, and one of these days it's going to be too late, and they'll stay long enough to get drawn into the tribulation period. But God is calling people out today to get out of the religious systems of this world. And when they hear the first call, don't wait, get out, move. Verse 47, he says, therefore, behold, the day come that I will, here's another I will, do judgment upon the graven images. Now notice where the judgment fall, upon the religious, not political, upon the graven images, and her whole land shall be confounded, and all her slain shall fall in the midst of her. The day is coming, and this is a promise. Behold, the day come. We don't doubt this fact, that day is coming. There's many scriptures that we could use. The time's getting away from me tonight. And so I'm just going to give you some, and you could look them up when you get home. But in Isaiah 44, read verses 21 through 28. Is interesting along this line. Isaiah 49, 8 through 13. And God is going to do a special work. And during that time, the heavens and the earth and all that is within shall say. There's going to be a time of rejoicing in the heavens because of the promise, you see, because of what God is doing. And in Revelation 18, who read last? I lose track. Roberta, it's your turn. Okay, Alan, Revelation 18:20, and Evelyn, Revelation 19:1-5, and this will be the time of praise, especially in heaven, over what God is doing. 18:20. All right, now this is the middle of the judgment, isn't it? Right in the middle of it, as though we just stopped everything for a time of the heavens to sing. Then after the judgment, we have 19, verses 1 through 5, I believe it is, of singing over her fall. And what goes in the praise? God's judgment upon this false system. And so in Isaiah 44 and 49, we have, looking forward to this, In Revelation 18:20, we have during the judgment, and 19, then we have after it's over. So this may look like a parenthetical verse, and we might call it that. But I think God stuck it in there for refreshment myself, because verse 49, then we go right back into destruction again. As Babylon has caused the slain of Israel to fall, so Babylon shall fall the slain in all the earth. Better rendering is land here. So all of those that were in harmony with Babylon will fall with Babylon. I think we have the same thought in verse 52 of the same chapter. We'll get to that in a minute. But they're all going to fall together. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away. Stand not still. Remember the Lord and let Jerusalem come to your mind. There's four definite things here that they're called to do. That leave in verse 48. Let's see down there. What verse was it? Verse 45, rather, to do. One is ye that escaped the sword. And this is speaking of the remnant that we had and we just read of in Revelation 12, that will escape the sword. Many will die, even of God's people. Some will escape the sword. Those that escape the sword, you go away. Run and hide, in other words. Get away from there. Don't just stand still. Get a move on. But when you do it, remember the Lord afar off. Remember the Lord afar off. Keep your mind upon Jerusalem. See, come and keep your mind on that, because that's what God is going to do. And I might make this statement. When you see things happening, don't get too occupied with what Russia's doing or Germany's doing or the United States is doing. You keep your eye on Jerusalem, because that's the center of all the prophecies. I mean, it's nice to see what these other people are doing and God shifting nations around. But you keep your eye on Jerusalem. And I think the thought here is like we have in Daniel 6. And if you'll remember the case in Daniel 6, that an order came in that you couldn't pray to anybody except the king. And what did Daniel do? Immediately he went home, he opened his windows toward Jerusalem, and he began to pray. And why did he do that? Because God told him to do that. Roberta, look up 1 Kings 8 and read 44 and 45 and notice the instructions for the soldier of God in trouble. Where are they supposed to look? Keep your eyes on there. This will be a true statement too, because this is where God's work is going to be. Another one, Alan, Psalms 5, I think it's verse 7. Notice what he says about looking to Jerusalem. This is their place. And so they're going to look towards Jerusalem. It's going to keep Jerusalem in mind. Verse 51, we are confounded because we have heard reproach. Shame hath covered our faces, like a veil. For strangers are come into the sanctuary of the Lord. Now this happened when Nebuchadnezzar came. So we go back a little bit in thought. But this thought is continuing in the minds of the children of Israel. And as Jeremiah looks at this, and he seems to sense what Judah will say and what they will do. And the thought here, I believe, is look at us. We don't understand what's going on. You would think that God would take care of his temple and his house. There's so many thoughts that we could apply in there, but I think the thought is everything is broke down. We're here in shame as though we have a veiled face. And what's going on? Because the next verse answers the question. Wherefore, or therefore, or because of this, behold, the day comes, saith the Lord, and I will do judgment upon the graven images. And though through her land, the wounded shall groan. Now, notice the thought here in this is they saw this thing as evil and political. God saw this thing as evil and religious. Notice his answer. Who's he going to judge? The graven images. Of course, the graven images in Babylon, but there were other places too. And so the graven images is going to be judged. And when Israel moves out all of their graven images and sees only the Messiah, then God's going to come to their answer and he's going to destroy these things. verse 53, though Babylon should mount up as heavens, and though she should fortify the heights of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come to her, saith the Lord. Now this is still an answer to their cry in verse 51. And here's what he's saying. He's saying, though Babylon gets bigger and bigger and bigger, though they look absolutely unconquerable, though they're fortified beyond measure, and their strength is perfect, yet from me spoilers will come. There's nothing too big for God, is there? They may look awful big in people's sight, and we can apply these to circumstances in our life. Things look so big sometimes, and so little in God's sight. They look like they're going to overcome us to the uttermost, but they're just a toy when God begins to work in them. They're nothing. And so he's saying, don't pay attention to how big Babylon is. That had nothing to do with it. They're not as big as I am. So when God gets ready to spoil them, he's going to spoil them. And he's going to have somebody do this. Verse 54, the sound of a cry cometh from Babylon, great destruction from the land of Chaldea. We talked about the difference between Babylon and the Chaldeans before. And when God judges, the cry will come up. But you know, this cry isn't going to be heard. Only the cry of his people is heard, isn't it? This will go on. There'll be people in terrible situation, terrible pain. And the reason, verse 55, because the Lord hath spoiled Babylon and destroyed her out of her the great voice, when her waves do roar like great waters, and the noise of her voice is uttered. And we can say that it's just a noise. That's all it is. It's just a noise. She might sound big, but she's just a noise. The Lord's still going to spoil her. And notice when her waves do roar great water. When she gets to the extremity of her power. And again, I say it's going to seem like little Israel is just going to be overwhelmed. And there'll be nothing left. But God is still on the throne. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, God will lift up a standard against him. I will make, verse 57, I will make drunk her princes and her wise men and her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep, not wake, saith the Lord, the King, whose name is the Lord of hosts. God is in that. If we read Daniel 5, it doesn't say one word about God doing that. But here we read that it was God that did it, wasn't it? It was God that got them drunk. And he had everything ready. Remember this in our life, that God always works on both ends of the line at the same time. You might think he's just working in your life, but he's working in somebody else's too to bring these things together, and he's going to do it. At the same time he was bringing the Medes and the Persians down there, he was making drunk the princes and the wise men and the captains and her rulers and all of these for a perpetual sleep. And then I'm just going to do one more verse and quit. Remember, this is the Lord of hosts that's doing it, Lord of might, of power. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken down, broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire, and the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, they shall be weary. So God is going to bring these things to pass. No matter how broad the walls is, they're going to be broken down. Seem like sometimes things are so big and so powerful, but not when God touches them. Now remember, we said that this wasn't all done in one time or one day, done over a period of years, but in God's time, he's going to do it. He's going to fulfill every promise that he makes. And all these things that seem to be such a barrier to the people of God will be destroyed.